Okay, good morning, everybody, and thank you for joining us again. As we discussed last week in our first class, the weekly shiur will be on some type of halacha topic that stems from the weekly parsha. When you look through Parshas Lech Lecha, I don't know how many of us have yet, but you'll look through a little bit later on your own and you'll notice it's so strikingly obvious that the one major theme that you find throughout the parsha is about how important, how central Eretz Yisrael is supposed to be to all of us. And I just want to point out a few of the places where the parsha speaks about it. Number one, the opening words of the parsha, Vayomer al Avram, Lech lecha me'artzecha mimoladetecha mibeis avicha el ha'aretz asher areka. The first thing that Avram Avinu is told is he should leave his land, he should leave his family, and he should go el ha'aretz asher areka, which is obviously the land of Eretz Yisrael. You skip a few pages, and then once again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to him and he says, Ad Olam, I'm going to give you this cherished land, this prized land of Eretz Yisrael. Ad Olam, it's not something that I'm going to give you now and that's it. It's a one-time acquisition and then once you pass away, it's going to be over. This is something that is going to belong to your descendants. Ad Olam forever. Then God reassures him again that he's going to have a wonderful family and he's going to have a big heritage in the world and they're going to make big contributions. But not only does it stop there, Avraham Avinu is told once again by the Bris Ben Abisarim, Bayomahu Karas Hashem es Avraham Bris Leimar. And that day at the Bris Ben Abisarim, later in our parsha as well, Avraham Avinu is told, Lezaracha Nasati es Haaretz Hazos. Not Lezaracha Etain, I will give in the future. Lezaracha Nasati, I have already given from now. In future generations, they have already acquired the land of Eretz Yisrael from now. And then once again, finally in the parsha, we are told at the very end of the parsha, the beginning of Shvi, Vakimosi es brisi beini ubeinecho bein zaracha acharecha ledorosam lebris alam. I will stick to my word. I will make sure to keep my promise that what? That I'm going to give you v'nasati lecha lezarecha acharecha es eretz megurecha es kol eretz kenal na'achuzas olam v'hayisi lachem lelokim. So it's very obvious that when you talk about one theme that clearly comes out of our parsha, it is clear at a time certainly when the world is questioning whether or not we have a right to the land of Israel, whether or not we have a right to actually hold on to the Kotel. Is it really ours or are we going to now? I don't know how many people read the news yesterday, but it was pretty clear that there's a discussion in the UN whether or not the Kotel actually belongs to the Jews or it should go and be under the jurisdiction of the enemies of the Jews because somehow the Kotel seems to be a wall that is blocking, that is guarding the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Okay, you know, they're coming up with all sorts of ideas, but at a time when our sovereignty over Eretz Yisrael, over many wonderful holy places is being questioned, it's obviously a time for us to strengthen our belief, to talk seriously about our commitment to Eretz Yisrael and what exactly it means. And therefore, I want to speak this morning about the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Just by way of introduction, let's look at a Gemara Ksuvas Daf Kuf Yud Amud Beis, where the Gemara says it's the first entry on the source sheet. Le'olam yidar adam be'eretz Yisrael. A person should always choose to live in the land of Israel. Afilu be'ir sheruba ov de'kochavim. Even if that means, let's say I live here in the five towns, and it's a thriving Jewish community, and we have yeshivas and day schools, and we have plenty of places that we can grow spiritually, and we can involve ourselves in many wonderful things. So you'll say, why should I move? I have such a good infrastructure. I don't not like the land of Israel, but where am I going to move there? I can't afford an apartment in Yerushalayim, so where am I going to go? On some hilltop, I'm going to live by myself? What am I going to do there? Says the Gemara, La'olam yadu adam eretz Yisrael afilu be'ir sharuba ov de'kochavim. Even if the alternative is going to be that you're going to move to a place where it's ruba ov de'kochavim, and they might have a negative impact on you, and it's not going to be the same as the infrastructure that you have here, and it's not going to be as spiritually elevating as you have a life here, still says the Gemara, La'olam yadu adam be'eretz Yisrael. Va'al yidr b'chutz la'aretz. And we should not choose to live in chutz la'aretz, va'afilu be'ir sharuba Yisrael. Now here's the striking line, Shekol hador be'eretz Yisrael. Anyone who chooses to live in Eretz Yisrael, Dome kimi sheyesh lo eloa. It is considered like you have a God that you believe in. Now, what does the flip side mean? Wait for this. V'chal hador b'chutz la'aretz, meaning all of us who are guilty of this terrible sin, of living in chutz la'aretz, Dome kimi she'ein lo eloa. It is as if you don't have a God. It is like you do not believe in God. Shenemar, Laseis lachem es Eretz Kanan, lihios lachem lelokim. The pasuk says, "I will give you the land of Eretz Yisrael, And the end of the pasuk is Liyos Lachem Lelokim, and I will be your God. What do you mean? He's going to be our God regardless of the land of Israel. We have to believe in God anyway. Says the Gemara, it must be that there's some very close connection between believing in God and living in the land of Israel. And if you choose not to live there, Dome Kimi She'ein Lo Eloa. It's as if you do not believe in God at all. And not only that, the Rambam takes it a little bit further. The Rambam, in the second entry on the source sheet, writes in Hilchos Malachim, Perakei Halacha Yud, Beis, La'olam Yadar Adam Be'eretz Yisrael, same as the Gemara, Afila B'Yirshiru Be'Goyim, Val Yadar B'Chutz La'aretz V'Afila B'Yirshiru Be'Yisrael. So far, so good. Now says the Rambam, a stronger terminology than the Gemara itself said. She'kalayotze L'Chutz La'aretz, somebody who chooses to live outside of Eretz Yisrael, not just that you don't believe in God, but ki'ilu oved avodah zarah. Very strong words for those of us living in Chutz La'aretz. And this is why I believe it's something that's really critically important to speak about. I believe it's not spoken about enough. I believe our perspective on how central, on how essential Eretz Yisrael is supposed to be, is something that we don't talk about often enough. And it's something we don't take seriously enough. It's something that we say, oh, you know, when I was in yeshiva, when I went to seminary, when we have children there, so you say, yeah, they're idealistic children, they want to move to Israel. But for us, it's not for us. It is absolutely for us, and it's something for us to think about. So you'll ask, what am I doing here? Very good question. So I'll tell you. My father asked, Rabbi Avram Shapiro, who was the Rosh Yeshiva in Merkaz Harav for many, many years. He was probably the staunchest Zionist that one could imagine. You know, Merkaz Harav is the bastion of much of the Israeli society. And the religious community there. And my father once went to Rabbi Avram Shapiro many years ago when I was a child, and he asked, I guess not that many years ago. So he asked Rabbi Avram Shapiro, you know, I'm thinking a lot about the mitzvah of Yishev Eretz Yisrael. Maybe I should move to Eretz Yisrael. It really doesn't make sense that I'm staying in America. Why am I here? And Rabbi Avram Shapiro has told him, absolutely not. You have an obligation to stay in America because you have so many people that are relying on you. And until every Jew leaves the state, until every Jew leaves your dominion, until every Jew doesn't any longer need you in America, then you might have a right to move to Eretz Yisrael. But until that happens, you are necessary to stay there. We need you in that community because there's nobody else who's doing what you should do. This is not Rabbi Avram Shapiro's Chiddush. This is spoken about in the Tshuvas of the Maharam Shik, who was a Talmud of the Chasam Sofer in Europe about 200 years ago, 250 years ago. And it's something that that we think about very seriously. Yes, I believe that I should be living in Eretz Yisrael. I'm sorry, my mother-in-law, it's hard for you to hear that. But I believe I should be living there. I believe of the centrality. I believe in the importance. But I do believe that I have a job here. Look around. How many people came this morning, right? So until every one of you moves back, I will be here for the next little while. So that's by way of introduction. But I don't know what your excuse is, as we'll see. So let's begin like this. There is, in fact, even a Medrash Tanoim. The Medrash tells us that there were a bunch of Tanoim. A fascinating story, the Medrash says, that at the time of Churban Bayis Sheni, so there was Ra'av Ba'aretz, and it was a terrible time, and there was famine, and life was very difficult there. And it says that a group of Tanoim decided, it's time for us to leave. We can't manage living in Eretz Yisrael. Let's move to Chutz La'aretz. There's no Beis HaMikdash anyway anymore. Time to leave. And what does the Medrash tell us? I didn't put it on the sheet, but let's just listen. It says there was a group of Tanoim, Shehayu Yotzen L'Chutz La'aretz. Beis HaMikdash is just destroyed. Life is terrible in Eretz Yisrael. They can't seem to figure out how to make a living. They can't seem to figure out how to find food. There are some source sheets for those who just came in, somewhere over there. So it says that they're on their way out. V'higiyu leflatya, and they get to a certain part of Chutz La'aretz, and they realize, all of a sudden it hits them. V'zachru es Eretz Yisrael. And they remember, what are we doing? What are we doing? Can you believe it, that a whole group of Tanaim are leaving Eretz Yisrael? So you'll say they're leaving because they're under duress, because they can't handle the situation that's going on there. But still, they all of a sudden it hits them, and they say, can you believe it that we're leaving? Zakfu einayim v'zalgu demoseyim. They begin to cry bitterly. V'karu bigdehem. And they rip kriya, like we would on losing a relative. V'karu es hamikra hazeh. And they say over to one another, v'yirishtem osa v'yishavtem osa. Do we not remember that we have a mitzvah to go live in Eretz Yisrael? Amru, and they said, listen to this, Yeshivas Eretz Yisrael Shekula Keneged Kol HaMitzvah Shabbatar. Living in Eretz Yisrael is equal, of paramount importance to the entirety of the Tariq Mitzvahs in the Torah. V'chazru Ubo Lohem LaEretz Yisrael. Immediately they turned around, they caught themselves, they realized it was a mistake in judgment, we should not be leaving, and they all went back immediately following the Churban Beis HaMikdash. It's a difficult question that has been asked in every generation, and it's something that we have to ask ourselves as well. What is our role in Chutz La'aretz, and what are we doing here? And what excuse do we have not to be living there? It's not a simple answer, and this is not a question we shouldn't be uncomfortable, because this is not a question that started in our generation. This is a question that's been asked for many, many hundreds of generations. In fact, the Sefer HaKuzari, which I put on here, Kuzari is a fascinating story. It's a Sefer in Jewish philosophy. If we have a chance, we should learn it one of these days. It's a very important work in Jewish philosophy. And there, the Sefer HaKuzari, written by Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi, basically conjures up a story where he had this community, a non-Jewish community called the Kuzarim, who were leaded by the Melach HaKuzarim, the king of the Kuzarim. And apparently the king of the Kuzarim kept on sending, it's not clear if the story is really true, I think they say it's not really true, but basically this is the story that he writes, that this king was sending him all sorts of difficult philosophical questions. And every single time the king asked him a question, Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi responded. Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi lived in the 1100s. I think he passed away 1139, 1140 or something. But Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi was responding to all the philosophical debates that were posed before him. And he had no problem. And all of a sudden, the end of the story that he writes is that the Melech HaKuzarim was so convinced of the Jewish religion, he decided to convert, and his entire community converted as well. Now, the story is a made-up story, but what's important is that Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi wrote for us what Jewish philosophy should be answering to many difficult questions. And here we have a very difficult question that is supposedly posed to Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi by the Melech HaKuzarim. Let's read it together. The third entry. So, Achein matzasa makom cherpasi melech kuzar. So here we have, all of a sudden, Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi, after answering all the philosophical questions, and he has good answers for everything, all of a sudden he's pinned with a question, and he can't figure out how to get himself out of it. What does he say? Melech HaKuzarim asks him, what's with all those Jews who aren't living in Israel? How do you answer that? 1100s. Achein matzasi, what does Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi say? You have found makom cherpasi, Melech Kuzar, my dear king, my friend, you have found my place of embarrassment. You have finally nailed me on a question that I have no good answer for. And let's read what he says. Ki amnam chetzehu asher biglolo lo neskaim hayud asher yod eloka lebayis hasheni. God really wanted that the second Beis HaMikdash should be everlasting. However, it's because of us that it wasn't. What does that mean? Ve'ilunenu kulam mekriya v'shavu la'eretz Yisrael b'nefesh chafetza. Had the entire Jewish population actually responded to God's calling and come back in the time of the Bayis Sheni, which we did not, had only we come back, aval rak mekzasam nenu. It's a terrible thing that only a few people responded and came back. V'rubam v'achashuvim shavahem. And most of the Jewish community did not. Most of them neglected God and decided Israel is not for us, and they chose to stay behind. Nisharu b'bavel maskimim legalus, as if we're giving a stamp of approval to our state of being that we're now living in galus. Lachein gamlam eloka kemachshavas libam. You know what? God said, if that's what you want, well, that's what you're going to get. God tells us you have an opportunity to come back, build a Beis HaMikdash, flourish in Eretz Yisrael, prosper, have a wonderful community. You choose not to, you know what? The reaction is going to be, you're not going to have a Beis HaMikdash. It's going to be your problem. If you don't want what I'm giving you, if you don't value the gift that I'm about to present, then you're not going to have it. Says the Kuzari, V'niskayimu b'hem havtachas elukus, rak b'midim utzumtzemes, kifi miut hisarurusa. God paid us back because we had no enthusiasm, because we weren't interested. God said, you know what, I'm not interested either. And I'm not going to give you what I had planned to give you in its full, in its entirety. Af anu, says the Kuzari Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi, ilu hayinu muchanim lehiskarev el elokei avoseinu. If only we were actually interested in coming close and having a deep connection, a relationship with God Himself, ki oz hu haya yizbarach moshiyenu, God would actually save us. Kasher hoshias avoseinu b'mitzrayim, the same way that He saved our ancestors from Mitzrayim, God can do anything. Are we concerned? Do we think that God, Hayad Hashem Tiktzar, do we think that God doesn't have the ability to actually save us from the clutches of Galus? Of course He can. And therefore, says Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi, Achshav She'ein HaDavar Kein, but now that we all know that our passion is not the way it's supposed to be, and that our desire for this is not where it should be, Ein hadvarim shenu omrim b'tfiloseinu. How many times in our davening, says the Kuzari, do we mention about Eretz Yisrael? Hishtachu l'Hashem har ha'kodesh b'Yerushalayim. V'sechazen ha'inenu b'shuv chalutziyam b'rachamim. V'li Yerushalayim yirucha b'rachamim toshav. V'asemach David avdecham eres ha'tzmiach. How many times do we talk about it? And says the Kuzari, all of that ki'im k'dibur ha'tochi k'tzifzuf ha'zarzir. You know what you are? Says the Kuzari, and I'm speaking to myself as well, he says, what all of us are is like birds that are chirping, just saying things that make no sense. And that's what we are as well. What do we mean when we say in our davening so many times a day? Are we thinking about any of it? Do we sincerely want what we speak about? Ki belo kavanas halev anu omrim dvarim elo domeyem kasher he'arta betzedek sar hakuzarim. I am sorry to inform you that you have now pinned me down on the most difficult question that I have no good answer for. There is no reason. God wants to give us so much. God wants to bless us with so much eternity. And we're just not willing to take it. Here he is. He gives us a land. He gives us a place to go. He tells us after the Churban Beis HaMikdash, it's time to come back. We don't go back. We daven every day that we want it. How much do we want it? If we really wanted it, God would give it to us. God would respond to us in the same way we are reacting to him. And that, says the Kuzari, is something for all of us to think about. So let's get into a little bit of the halachic aspect of this idea of mitzvahs yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And I think you can break it down into two components. And that is, I think there's a mitzvah number one on the Jewish community to have a Jewish country. And then there's number two, a mitzvah as well on each individual person. I want to speak about each one separately. Number one, let's focus on the mitzvah for the Jewish community as a whole to perform the mitzvah of yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Let's look first at the Ramban. The Ramban is a number Dalet on the Shur sheet. Now what's interesting is the Rambam in his time, not the Ramban, the Rambam, Maimonides, wrote a Sefer HaMitzvos. Now for some reason we assume, there's a Gemara in Makos that seems to indicate like this, but it's not clear. We assume that there are 630 mitzvos. You ask any school child, they'll say, of course, 630 mitzvos. Who said that's true? Who said there are 630 mitzvos? Not really clear. It's not really clear that that's true, and there are many who assert that is not true. There are more than 630 mitzvahs, or perhaps less than 630 mitzvahs. But the operating number that we grew up on is there are 630 mitzvahs. That's what the Rambam assumes as well. And the Rambam decided, well, if there are 630 mitzvahs, it behooves us to figure out what exactly is considered a mitzvah and what is not. So the Rambam wrote what he calls a Sefer HaMitzvahs. He collects, he goes through the whole Torah, and he figures out what exactly should be counted as a mitzvah and what is not. Now what's interesting is, in the back of that Sefer HaMitzvahs of the Rambam, the Ramban, Nachmanides, came along and he says, I don't agree with your count. How did you come up with this? Yes, I agree with the premise that there are 630 mitzvahs, but I disagree with the ones that you counted. And he takes out about 16, 17 that the Rambam counted, and he has to make up new ones. So it's not so easy. So here he pounces on the Rambam and he says, I don't understand. How did you miss the most important mitzvah of everything? How do you not count the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael? You look through the whole Rambam Sefer HaMitzvahs, nowhere does it say that we have a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. And the Ramban says, this is astounding. How can this be? Had the Rambam forget about this? Just in Parshas Lech Lecha alone, we have four references where God promises us you're going to live in Eretz Yisrael. How many times throughout our davening do we say it? How could it be that the Rambam leaves this out? It doesn't make sense. Says the Ramban as follows. Nitzdavinu la'reshes es ha'aretz. We have an obligation to go. La'reshes es ha'aretz means to go and conquer the land. Asher Nasan Hakel El Yisala Lavosenu LaAvram Yitzchak Yaakov. God promised this to Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov LaZaracha Etanena. I'm going to give it to your children. Nasati, I already gave it in the end of our parsha, we're told. So we have a mitzvah. V'lo Nazvena Biyadzu Lasenu Min Ha'umos. Says the Ramban, two parts here. Lo Nazvena Biyadzu Lasenu Min Ha'umos. We are not allowed to have another nation of the world have sovereignty over Eretz Yisrael. That's number one. Ol l'shemama, not only are we not allowed to have somebody else have sovereignty, but we also have an obligation to make sure that every part of the land is tended to and is not left barren and forsaken. V'zehu shenemar, says the Ramban. He quotes the pasuk where we learn it from. What you see from the Ramban is there are two components to this mitzvah. Number one, we have an obligation to make sure that we set up a Jewish government, that we have sovereignty over the land. But that's not enough. That's not enough, says the Ramban. Even once we have sovereignty, We also have a secondary obligation, which is to make sure that every part of the land of Eretz Yisrael is actually inhabited, to make sure that everything is built up, to make sure there's plantation going on everywhere, to make sure that everything is going to be as prosperous as we possibly can make it. We have to make sure that it's not left lishamama, that it's not left desolate, that it's not left alone. We have that obligation not only to set up a government, but also to make sure that every part of that land is tended to and is built up as properly as possible. That's what we're told from the Ramban. Now, what's interesting of this part of the Ramban is, let's say, take for example, so we, for whatever reason, live in Chutz Laretz, and we have either good reasons or bad reasons, but we live here. And the question is, let's say I can afford to have a place in Eretz Yisrael. So you'll say, well, I'm not going to live there, but I'll visit a few times a year, and I want to buy an apartment. Well, is there anything that's gained by buying an apartment? Well, obviously, you just want to save money on a hotel, or you want to make an investment, whatever. But leaving that aside, now I go and I buy an apartment because I'm an idealist. I decide, right now, I cannot move my family to Eretz Yisrael for whatever reason, but I want to try and be Mekai in the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Do I get any points for buying an apartment in Eretz Yisrael? A very interesting question. And this is something that's discussed in a sefer that was written in Europe, called the Piskei Tshuva, which is a very beautiful sefer that had a haskama from the Ger Rebbe in Europe. It was a very well-acclaimed sefer. And this sefer, Piskei Tshuva, discusses this story at length. And there he writes that perhaps, because the Ramban says there's a second component to the mitzvah, not only to be involved in the sovereignty of the land, but also to make sure that it shouldn't be shemama, that it shouldn't be desolate, well, by me buying an apartment there, by me planting a tree there, or something of that nature, I am now being involved in that second part of what the Ramban says is mitzvahs yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So in fact, he says, I do have a partial fulfillment of the mitzvah by buying land there, because I am making sure that it won't be shemama. I'm making sure that it's going to be built up, that it's not going to lay barren. However, he writes, I'll get to your question in a minute, however, he says, that's only provided that you buy a piece of land that was not built up before, or you buy a piece of land from a non-Jew who was otherwise inhabiting the land. But let's say, like most of us who buy an apartment, let's say you buy it from a Jewish realtor, or you buy it from somebody, there was a Jew living there, now you offer him $1 million more, so of course he's going to sell it to you. So now, am I actually in fulfillment of anything? He suggests no. Because not only are you not living there, not only are you not contributing to society there, but now you bought an apartment and you kicked somebody else out from the apartment who was living there, who was doing a wonderful job making sure that their land is built up. You haven't helped anything. And therefore, he would suggest that in a case like that, which I assume is most of our story, anyone who has an apartment, I assume, probably bought it from a Jew. In a case like that, he suggests, unless you live there, you might not have a fulfillment at all. I'm sorry to say the bad news. So that's with regard to that. Just an interesting thing, but that's something that you see from this Ramban. Now, there's a very interesting idea that's suggested by one of the Balei Atosas in Ksubas Daf Kuf Yud Amud Beis. And he says, you know what? You're right that there's a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. It's a very important thing, and we find it throughout the Torah, references all over, and the Ramban already told us we have an obligation to go live there. However, he says, this does not apply nowadays. Why not? Well, he writes, because it's going to be so difficult to actually fulfill the mitzvahs once we get there. You know how many things you have to keep in mind? Shumas and Maisus and Shemitah and Yovel and all these different things and Hakel, and you have so many mitzvahs that are Tluyas Baretz that you can only fulfill in Eretz Yisrael. It's going to be too difficult, therefore, throw it out the window. Well, I have a wonderful idea. I believe that Shabbos is a very difficult mitzvah. I think it's very restrictive. I think it's very hard to follow all the laws of Shabbos. And therefore, I suggest to all of you, with your consideration, maybe we should think about getting rid of Shabbos. Because to me, I find it very difficult. I would imagine that this is something that nobody would suggest. So how is it that one of the Balei Atosas assumes that, oh yeah, because the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is just going to be way too difficult, therefore let's just throw it out and forget about this whole mitzvah, let's disregard everything that all the Rishonim tell us, and let's make pretend like this mitzvah doesn't exist. That's a very difficult statement, and therefore it leads many of the Achronim to suggest, Talmid Toa Kasavo. The guy was sleeping in shir that day, he didn't know what he was talking about, he wrote something, and somehow for all posterity it ends up on the side of the page of the Gemara, but it's a mistake. The whole thing is a mistake. It cannot be. You can't say such a thing. Maybe what he meant to say is, they suggest, maybe what he meant to say is that because it's a sakana to get there, because they were living at the times of the Crusades, and because they knew that they might lose their lives by trying to travel to Eretz Yisrael, so perhaps we don't have a mitzvah, we don't have an obligation to give up our lives in order to fulfill this mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. The same way, I don't have an obligation to give up my life for the mitzvah of keeping Shabbos. I don't have to sacrifice my life for keeping Shabbos. Yes, it might be difficult, but if my life is on the line, I won't keep Shabbos. So therefore, over here, he suggests as well, maybe that's what he meant. Of course, the mitzvah applies forever. Of course, the mitzvah is something that we always have to think about. However, he says, when we come to a generation where it's too dangerous to actually get there, and we might be sacrificing our own lives to get there, then we might have an excuse that the mitzvah might not apply to us. Now, nowadays, obviously, that would not be a consideration, because nowadays, it's not dangerous to get there. Nowadays, we all travel all the time. Nowadays, we go there at our leisure, and it's not something that we're concerned about. Nowadays, okay? These past couple of weeks, it is a little dangerous, but for the most part, we assume that it's not something that we are very concerned about, and therefore, I think most would assume that nowadays it is certainly a mitzvah d'oraisa. It is an obligation that we all have to actually live in Eretz Yisrael to fulfill the mitzvah of Yishev Ha'aretz. Yeah.
At the time of the Rambam, what are we talking about as far as land of Israel? Do they ever talk about borders?
Sure.
I mean, especially since you're saying that it all has to be built up.
Right.
So
that's a very rich discussion about what the borders actually are. In fact, there's a lot of halachic literature about Eilat. Nowadays, we have Eilat as a very built-up Jewish community. Is that something that's really considered to be part of Eretz Yisrael or not? And the question is, let's say you go to Eilat and you're there for Yontif. Let's say I go on a program in Eilat. Am I supposed to keep... And let's say I'm a real Israeli and I'm supposed to be keeping one day, not like us who are supposed to be keeping 2 days when we go there, by the way. Talk about that some other time. So when you go to Eretz Yisrael and you actually live there and... you are going to Eilat for Yontif on a program. Do you keep 1 day of Yontif or do you keep 2 days of Yontif? Perhaps you are now in Chutz Laaretz. That's a very, very wonderful question. And it's discussed, if I'm not mistaken, the Rishonim talk about it in Gittin on Daf Beis. The very first page of Gittin, the Gemara there discusses what exactly the boundaries are, what exactly the borders are, and how we would draw the line. It's a very important question, which I wasn't planning on getting into today, but it's not easy how you draw the line. And in fact, let's say you'll say, we fight a war and now we extend the borders. Does it now become Eretz Yisrael? Does it now become Kedushas Ha'aretz? Are we now Chayv and Shumas Ha'maishas? These are all very, very important questions.
At that time, they were talking about, like, obviously, all Judea and Samaria.
Right.
And Israel.
Correct, yeah. Now, there's a very interesting question. If we assume that this is really a biblical commandment to go and live, it's an obligation for us to live in Eretz Yisrael, then you have a very interesting discussion that the Gemara has in Sota Daf Yud Dalet. The Gemara says, Moshe Rabbeinu at the end of his life, Parshas V'eschanan. What's Parshas V'eschanan all about? V'eschanan al Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu is davening to Hashem that he wants to enter Eretz Yisrael, and God doesn't let him. Why? Because God feels that he did something wrong in his life, and he doesn't deserve to go in. Ask the Gemara. Well, that's all we have in the Psukim of Chumash, but in fact, there was a meta conversation going on. God asked Moshe Rabbeinu, why do you want to go into Eretz Yisrael? V'chi lechel mipiria? What, you're so hungry? You want to go in because you heard that the fruits are so delicious there? That's why you want to go in? Is that all that Eretz Yisrael means to you? V'chi d'sba mituva? All you need from Eretz Yisrael is because we have such nice weather, because the atmosphere is so wonderful, that's why you want to go in? Moshe Rabbeinu says, no, that's not why. Of course not. I'm Moshe Rabbeinu. I have more in mind than that. The reason why I want to go in is because I can only fulfill the mitzvah of Shumas HaMaisers, of all these mitzvahs at Tlis Baretz. I can only do them if I'm in Eretz Yisrael. If I don't have a chance to go in, I'm not going to ever have a chance to fulfill those mitzvahs. Says God, you know what? If you care so much about the mitzvahs, I'll consider it as if you fulfill them, even though I'm not going to let you in. That's what the Gemara says. Ask the Meshech Chachma. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu answer very simply? What do you mean, God? The Ramban says that there's a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. Of course that's why I want to go in. Why are you talking about mitzvahs? Why are you talking about the mitzvah of Chumas HaMaisas? Why are you talking about the fruits? Why are you talking about the atmosphere, the climate? Why don't you say very simply, I want to go in because you know how many psukim in the Chumash that I taught the Jewish people. You know how many psukim in Chumash talk about the fact that we're supposed to be living in Eretz Yisrael? That's why he wants to go in. I believe it's a very strong question. We're not going to get into the answer, but it's something to consider, something to think about. What happened with that conversation between God and Moshe Rabbeinu? What happened there? How come Moshe Rabbeinu didn't answer the simplest answer, that I want to go in because there's a mitzvah of Yishev Ha'aretz? Now, just to give a little perspective on the centrality of this mitzvah, if we haven't caught on to that idea yet, just to put a little bit more of a context to this. We have a Gemara in Gittin Daf Ches, as well as in Baba Kama Daf Pei, where the Gemara says a very startling statement when it comes to the mitzvah of Yishev Ha'aretz. You take, for example, we have an obligation every Rosh Hashanah to blow the shofar. We have an obligation every Sukkot to shake Dalet Minim, to shake Elul of an Esrog. What happens when it falls out on Shabbos? So we know. We don't blow shofar, we don't shake lulav. Why? Mukta. Okay. But that's not the real reason.
Carrying?
No, I mean, you're half right. Carrying. So what's the carrying? What's the issue? Says the Gemara as follows. Now, I don't know about anywhere else. I know here, they decide 6 months in advance who's going to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah in the little minion that has 5.5 people upstairs. Right? So everything is worked out. And we know way in advance. And the guy's been practicing for the last 6 months. He knows how to blow the shofar. Says the Gemara, well, you know, we're concerned of the following. Let's say Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos. And of course, we're going to send out an announcement that everybody should bring the shofar before Shabbos. No one's going to carry it outside. Of course, it's a wonderful idea. But what are we concerned? Of course, the Baal Tokeya is making sure he's going to bring his shofar before Shabbos. He's not going to carry it. We're concerned of the following. He's going to wake up Rosh Hashanah morning and come to shul, and he knows his shofar is in shul, and he's going to say, I'm really not prepared. I have no idea how to blow the shofar. What am I going to do? And he's going to take his shofar and run down the block to somebody else to teach him how to blow the shofar. And because we're concerned of this far-fetched consideration that will never happen, says the Gemara, because we're so concerned, the Chachamim said, you know what? Throw a mitzvah out the window when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos. Don't blow the shofar. Unbelievable. How concerned the Chachamim are that maybe we're going to come to violate something that's so far-fetched it's never going to happen. But still, the Chachamim made a safeguard. They made sure, don't get involved. Don't ever have that issue. You'll never have a problem. That's what the Gemara tells us. Now, you come to the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. For those who might not be aware, there's an Isser on Shabbos of Amir La'akum. We are not allowed to tell a non-Jew to do malacha on our behalf on Shabbos. If a non-Jew does it on their own, a different story, but we are not allowed to ask a non-Jew to do malacha for us. Now, what happens in the following case? Ask the Gemara. I'm negotiating with someone for 6 months. I want to buy an apartment in Eretz Yisrael. And finally, the deal goes through, and the person shows up at my door on Shabbos, Friday night, and he says, sign the contract. What do you mean, sign the contract? Don't you know it's Shabbos? I can't sign today. I'll sign tomorrow. What do you mean you'll sign tomorrow? I came here with the contract. What do you mean you came with the contract? I've been negotiating with you for 6 months. You couldn't come another day of the week. You know that I keep Shabbos. Says the Gemara, Kosvin alav ono afilu b'Shabbos. You're allowed to ask a non-Jew to sign the contract for you on Shabbos, says the Gemara, Mishum mitzvas yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Because the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael is so important. And think about it. What are we talking about here? Are we talking about building up the whole country? No, we're talking about me. I want to buy my apartment, my little place. And you know what? I'm not even going to live there. I'm just buying it because I want to help build up the land. Says the Gemara, that is so important. We're even going to allow you to violate the Isser of Amir La'akam on Shabbos and have a non-Jew sign the contract for you on Shabbos. And not only that, we find another fascinating halacha. This is a Gemara in Ksubas. It's also quoted in Shulchan Aruch, Eben HaEzer, and Siman Ayin Hey, where we have the following case. What happens when you have a couple? You know, Shalom Bayis we always consider to be of paramount importance. And not only that, the Gemara tells us that Mishum Shalom Bayis, God even allows his name to be erased by the Parsha of Sota that we'll read about in many weeks. We have a Parsha of Sota when a husband and wife are accusing each other, all sorts of things. God says, erase my name. That's how much God cares about Shalom Bayis. Now, what happens in a case like this? What happens if I live in New York, my wife wakes up one day and she says, you know what, I want to move to Texas. I say, what do you mean you want to move to Texas? I have a job here. Our children are in school. What are you talking about, moving to Texas? So what happens? So I think any normal person would say, well, you should go for marriage counseling. Figure it out, right? Go to the rabbi. Or don't go to the rabbi. Figure out a professional who should deal with this. What happens if you can't work it out? Right? So if you can't work it out, last thing that you have left to do is to divorce each other. You're going to move to Texas. You're going to stay here. Correct? Is that a foreign concept? I would imagine that makes sense. If you're adamant about moving away, so now here's the question. Do you deserve a ksuba or not? Well, when we got married, we made up, we're going to live here, I'm going to have a job, our children are going to go to school. All of a sudden, you decided to wake up out of nowhere. The wife decides she's going to move to Texas. Do you have a right to do that? Who's ruining the marriage? Who will you say is ruining the marriage in that case? She is. What are you doing? We had a wonderful life here, everything's fine. You decide to wake up one day and ruin our marriage. It's your problem. You forfeit your right to the ksuba. The same way the Gemara says, if a woman decides she's no longer going to the mikvah, well, the husband can't live with her anymore. In a case like that, says the Gemara, she forfeits her right to the ksuba because she is at fault for ruining the marriage. Well, take for example like this. What if you have a husband and wife, it doesn't make a difference which spouse decides this, but what if you have a fight that breaks out? We're living in New York, and one spouse wakes up on the wrong side of the bed one day and decides, I'm moving to Eretz Yisrael. And I say, what do you mean? We have a wonderful life here. What are you moving to Eretz Yisrael? I have like 300 grandchildren living here. Who do you think you are? We're going to give up the whole family. I'm going to give up my whole community. I'm going to give up all the schools, everything I'm doing here to move to Eretz Yisrael. I'm not interested. and we go for counseling and we can't work it out because you are adamant that you want to move, either the husband or the wife. In that case, says the Gemara, who is responsible for ruining the marriage? The one who wants to stay, says the Gemara, is responsible for ruining the marriage. And if the wife decides to move to Eretz Yisrael and the husband does not want to come along, he has to pay her a ksuba. And the flip side, if the husband wakes up one day and decides he wants to move to Eretz Yisrael and she's not willing to come along, she forfeits the right to her ksuba, even though she's the status quo. She's staying here. She's doing the normal thing. He's the one who decided to go crazy and move to Eretz Yisrael. But she's considered at fault for ruining the marriage because she is not willing to go to Eretz Yisrael. Unbelievable. It's amazing. And this is Paskin Lahalach and Shulchan Aruch. This is actually the way we would hold if we came to a court of law and we tried to figure out, well, does the man have to pay ksuba or not? Well, it depends. It depends who's at fault for ruining the marriage. And the same way we would assume that the person who decides not to go to the mikveh any longer is at fault for ruining the marriage, well, so too, one who decides not to go with the other spouse and move to Eretz Yisrael is considered at fault for ruining the marriage. Living in Eretz Yisrael is such a unique kind of mitzvah. Because generally when we have a mitzvah, we say, shake the lulav, light the Shabbos candles, do an act. You have to do something. But over here, you just have to be there. And not only do you have to be there, the Vilna Gaon points out, we have a pasuk that says, Vayhi b'shalim suko umo nasa b'tzion, not important, but basically the Vilna Gaon writes that there are two mitzvahs. Somebody asked last night a very good question. Why aren't there three? But I have to think about it. The Vilna Gaon writes that there are two mitzvahs that a person can fulfill with their entire body. And that is, number one, the mitzvah of Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, the mitzvah of Yeshiva Aretz, because when you go there, every fiber of your being is involved in the mitzvah of Yeshiva Aretz, even if you don't do anything. Just living there alone is already considered a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Yeshiva Aretz. And number two, the second mitzvah is the mitzvah of Yeshiva B'sukkah. To sit in the sukkah, we have a mitzvah that we fulfill with our entire body. Someone asked last night, what about mikvah? I think that's a wonderful question, but for some reason the Vilna Gaon doesn't talk about that. I don't know exactly why. But over here, it's just parenthetically, it's interesting. For those who remember, a couple of weeks ago, Rabbi Lavi was tragically murdered in the Muslim quarter. And it was on a Shabbos afternoon, and he was sitting and eating shalosh shittos with his family, and he hears downstairs that there was an attack, and he right away runs downstairs with his gun, and he tried to get involved. In the end, he gave up his life. He lost his life, unfortunately, al kiddush Hashem. What's fascinating is that the last thing that he told his family as they were sitting in sukkah eating shalosh shittos was, how fortunate we are. He told them over this Vilna Gaon that there are two mitzvahs you can fulfill with your entire body, and he said, how fortunate we are that we have the opportunity to fulfill both of these mitzvahs. We're living in the Muslim quarter, we're living in Eretz Yisrael with our entire bodies, and we're sitting in the sukkah at the same time. Can you imagine? We're having such an incredible opportunity. Right away he runs downstairs and he hears what's going on, and he had the opportunity to fulfill, unfortunately, the third mitzvah with his entire body. He gave up his entire body, al kiddush Hashem. That's just a fascinating anecdote from a couple of weeks ago. When you think about what the mitzvah of Yeshiva Eretz Yisrael actually is, it's something that's very, very important, it's something that's very central, and it's something that unfortunately sometimes we have people who give up their lives to fulfill it as well. The Chasam Sofer even writes, very interestingly, that not only is there a mitzvah to go to Eretz Yisrael, not only is there a mitzvah to prosper in Eretz Yisrael, but he says there's a special mitzvah when you get to Eretz Yisrael. You'll say, what do you mean? I'm the biggest Rosh Hashiva in the world. I'm the biggest Rebbetzin. I'm the fanciest king, queen, prince, everything. I'm not supposed to be getting my hands dirty. Says the Chasam Sofer, there's a special mitzvah in Eretz Yisrael to go out with your axe, with your shovel, with your hammer, and go start planting trees, and go start making sure that it's built up and everything. We have that obligation. He says, doesn't matter how special you are, doesn't matter how chashuv you think you are, everybody has that obligation to go and make sure that Eretz Yisrael is going to be inhabited. It's an unbelievable thing when you think about it. And he points out that Boaz was the Gadol Hadar in his generation. Boaz, as we read in Tanakh, was the Gadol Hadar. And still we're told that Boaz was running a field and Boaz was making sure to go out and take care of all the crops and take care of everything there. And this is something that the Chasam Sofer says, none of us should feel is beneath us, because making sure that Eretz Yisrael is built up is something that is all of our obligation individually as well. Not only that, this mitzvah seems to go even further. The Rishonim talk about it, and the Rambam has this. Let's look at number Hey on the Rambam in the source sheet. The Rambam writes as follows. Aser latzeis me'eretz Yisrael l'chutz la'aretz li'olam, says the Rambam. Not only do you have an obligation to live there, but let's say I already live there. Says the Rambam, you have no right to leave. You have no right to leave. Li'olam, forever. Are there any instances when we would allow it? Well, says the Rambam, yes. And this is based on the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Yud Gimel, where the Rambam teaches us that if a person feels that they cannot have a good opportunity to have a shidduch. If a person feels they can't get married in Eretz Yisrael, they're allowed to leave, says the Rambam, temporarily. But let's say somebody tells me, go to Chutz Laretz, I have the perfect girl for you, she's never going to move back to Israel, and you're going to be stuck there forever. Says the Rambam, quoting a Gemara, you have no right to leave. It's better to stay single your whole life in Eretz Yisrael. You have no right to leave on a permanent basis to go and get married. And the Rambam says another exception. To learn Torah. If you think there's a yeshiva that's very extra special for you, you're allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael for that, but only temporarily. So there are a couple of exceptions to the rule when we would assume a person's allowed to leave. But generally we assume, based on the Gemara, even once you're in Eretz Yisrael, you're not even allowed to leave temporarily unless you have a very good excuse. Now, when you think about it, what do you mean? I'm living in Eretz Yisrael. I want to go see the Alps. I want to see all the beauties of nature. I want to see everything. I want to go see the Orient. Am I allowed to do that? Not so clear. Not so clear. Why is it not so clear? Because if the Rambam and the Gemara even say that for the purpose of leaving Eretz Yisrael, you need to have a very good reason even to leave temporarily, says the Rambam. You're only allowed to leave Lisa Isha, Lil Motor, you're only allowed to leave for very important mitzvahs. Well then, what if you're not really fulfilling a mitzvah? What if you're just leaving just for leisure, just for pleasure? And this is something that's discussed at length in many of the Mefarshim on Halacha that talk about whether or not a person would even be allowed to leave temporarily from the land of Eretz Yisrael. When you talk about the flip side of that, it means that not only is there a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael and buy a home there and make sure that I do everything I can, but also to be there b'chol shav v'shav, to be there my entire life. When you think about it in that perspective, so then you talk about it from, let's say, our perspective, living in Chutz Laretz. Do we have even a partial kiyum ha-mitzvah? Do we have any fulfillment of the mitzvah if we go to Eretz Yisrael just for some period of time? Right? Again, this is just the opposite of what we've been discussing. If the Rambam says someone who lives in Eretz Yisrael is not even allowed to leave temporarily unless you have a very good excuse, then perhaps even if we just go temporarily, it's also good enough. Maybe that's also some sort of mitzvah of mitzvahs yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And this is something that's discussed as well. And the Magen Avraham says even if you visit, it's considered to be a fulfillment of the mitzvah of yishuv Eretz Yisrael in some way. That's what the Magen Avraham tells us, but he doesn't say how long you have to be there in order to have a partial fulfillment. So that's another big discussion. Some say 12 months. If you're there 12 months, that's already considered yishuv Eretz Yisrael. You live there because 12 months already, the Gemara says in Baba Basra in the first parak, that when you have 12 months in a community, they can already begin to start charging you taxes because you're considered a toshav. You're considered somebody who actually lives in the town and they can tax you for all sorts of things because now you're considered a resident. Before 12 months, we don't really consider you a resident. There are others who assume that 30 days is already considered a yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Just going for 30 days alone is already some sort of fulfillment of the mitzvah of yishuv Eretz. And therefore, practically, this would make a difference. Let's say you're not on a very tight schedule and you go to visit Eretz Yisrael and you have a choice to make a ticket either for 3 weeks or for 4 weeks. Well, which one should you choose? You say, well, I don't have to be in either place. Well, you may as well extend your ticket for an extra week because perhaps you'll have a fulfillment of the mitzvah of yishuv Eretz Yisrael if you stay for a month. Something to think about. If we have that opportunity. Some people can't. Some people have to work and they have to get back at a certain time. But let's say you don't have that consideration. Then if you have the choice to stay for 3.5 weeks or for 4, you should try and stay for 4 because according to many, that would be a partial fulfillment of the mitzvah of yishuv Eretz Yisrael just by being there for a month alone. Any questions? So you're not supposed to leave, but not only that, you're not supposed to be here in the first place. So that's a very good question. Yes? Right. So that's a very good question. Did everyone hear that? If, let's say, I know that by going to Eretz Yisrael, it's going to jeopardize my kids' chinuch. I know that we're not going to have, very often you have children who go there and they just can't integrate into society and they end up going away from the fold of Orthodoxy because it's something that they feel they can't figure out how to become a part of it. So this is a very important question. What are the parameters? When do we have a right? Basically, your question is, why is it that we all live here, right? And I think many of us say, we live here because we feel that the opportunities for our children in Eretz Yisrael might not be as good as they are here. Is that, am I understanding correctly?
It could be that way. I'm just still right. Saying when you can't leave. You're
right.
Saying that you couldn't, you know, when you're talking about the husband and the wife, mm-hmm. wanting to go and not wanting to go, mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this is a question that is discussed as well. At what cost do we actually have to be willing to live in Eretz Yisrael? You know, we have a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael, but my father likes to point out, we also have a mitzvah to be normal. We also have a mitzvah, and it's true. You know, they once went to Rav Soloveitchik and asked him, is it mutter or usher to go to somebody who is involved in hypnotizing? So he said, it's usher to be stupid. So, you know, it's true. But that was, you know, that's a lot of my father's way of thinking is, you know, you got to live a normal life. And part of what God wants from us in living in Eretz Yisrael is not that we shouldn't be able to live there and we shouldn't be able to prosper and we shouldn't be able to have a parnasa. In fact, the Chassam Sofer, if I'm not mistaken, writes in the Tshuva, let's say you have somebody who lives in Eretz Yisrael and who makes a parnasa from America. Whatever it is, you have plenty of people who work for an American bank, work for an American company. He says you are not in fulfillment of the mitzvah. Why? Because part of the mitzvah is you have to make sure that Eretz Yisrael is developing itself. So when you think about it from that perspective, that's what the Chassam Sofer writes. So we have an obligation to live. So what my father likes to say, we have an obligation to live in Eretz Yisrael, but we also have the opportunity to live normally. We have an opportunity if we think that there's going to be no parnasa there, if we think that we're not going to have an opportunity, if we think that our children are not going to be able to have a future there, then it's something for us to seriously consider. Obviously, we're not obligated to give all of that up in order for ourselves to be mekayem in the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Yes, it's very important, and that's what the focus of the shiur really was. But nowadays, I mean, I think for people who no longer have younger children to worry about, and you're just staying behind because, oh, it's nice to have your kids come visit for Shabbos, I don't know that that's a valid excuse. But to say that you're staying in America because you feel that the opportunities for your children spiritually are not going to be the same as they will be in Eretz Yisrael, if you feel that you're not going to be able to live a normal life, then perhaps that's something that we can think about why it is that many of us are still living here. Let's just close today's shiur with a very powerful insight. When you look in the parsha, we open up the parsha, Vayomer Hashem al Avram, Lech lecha me'artzecha, mimoladetecha mi'beis avicha, el ha'aretz asher areka. And it's been pointed out, this is the first conversation that God ever has with the first Jew, with the father of the Jewish people. And what was the conversation about? Eretz Yisrael. And that's not a coincidence. Because you go a little further in history, and the first conversation that God seems to have with every Jewish leader is always about Eretz Yisrael. You go a little bit later in a few parshios, Yitzchak Avinu also has an encounter with God. When does that happen? Vayihi rav ba'aretz. Yitzchak decides, there's a famine in the land, I can't stay here, I can't support myself, I can't sustain myself, I have to leave. And he's about to leave, and God comes to him and he says, what are you doing? Why are you leaving? Al terid Mitzrayim. Don't go down to Mitzrayim. Shchon ba'aretz azos. I want you, Yitzchak Avinu, to stay here. This is your land. You are not allowed to leave. Again, the first conversation, the first encounter that Yitzchak Avinu has with God is once again about Eretz Yisrael. You go a little further in the Psukim. Yaakov Avinu as well. What happens? Yaakov Avinu falls asleep. Hine sula mutzav arza v'rosha magiyah hashamayma. All of a sudden, God comes to him in a dream. And what does he say? God says to him, Ha'aretz asher atashochev aleh lecha etnena ulezarecha. God comes to Yaakov Avinu and he says, don't worry, this land that you're in right now, I'm going to give it to your children. V'ashivosicha la'adam azos, I'm going to return them after the exile to this land again. Kiloa azabcha, I will never leave you, I will never forsake you, and I will always make sure to keep my promise of bringing the Jewish people back home, of bringing them back to Eretz Yisrael. But it doesn't stop there. You have Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and once again Moshe Rabbeinu. The first time that he has an encounter with God, that he has an experience, is where? By the snap, by the burning bush. And what happens over there? HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to him and he says, Ra'o ra'isi es ani b'nei Yisrael b'mitzrayim. I have seen the suffering of the Jewish people. And then he says to him, but don't worry, I'm going to go and save them, and I'm going to bring you el ha'aretz ha'tova, Eretz of Aschala v'dvash el makam haknani. Don't worry, I'm going to bring the Jewish people back to Eretz Yisrael. And it doesn't stop at Moshe Rabbeinu, it continues with Yehoshua ben Nun. This is something that is so central to the belief of the Jewish people. And this is why this is the first encounter, the first experience that every Jewish leader has with God is always about the central theme of Eretz Yisrael. It is the first conversation. Because it's something that needs to be on the forefront of our conversations. It's something that needs to be on every discussion that we have. How central is Eretz Yisrael to our lives? How important do we consider the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael? How much do we think about it? How much do we care about it? How much do we talk about it and not mean what we say? How much do we say, yes, let's support Israel, but we don't really care? What are we supporting it for? What are we believing in? What cause are we fighting for? This is the reason why Avraham Avinu's first encounter, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, Yoshua ben Nun is all about Eretz Yisrael. And let's just close by reading the beautiful words of Rav Kook. In one of his letters he has, Yisod HaGalus VaHashiflus HaNimshach BaOlam. If you want to know the root, says Rav Kook, of all of the exile that we have experienced and continue to unfortunately experience in our lives, Ba Rak Mima She'en Modiim Es Eretz Yisrael. All of this stems from the fact that we don't make sure to let the world know, Erka V'Chachmasa, we don't care to tell the world about the value, about the incredible brilliance, about the incredible nature. Ein Misaknim Es Chet HaMaraglim She'otziya Diba Ala Aretz B'tshuvas HaMishko. We don't care to make good for what the Meraglim did wrong. They said terrible things about the land of Israel. We went into exile for that, and we have not tried to repair that. And he goes on to say, Lahagid, it is our obligation to tell, Ulevasar, and to inform, Ba'olam Kulo, the entire world. We have an obligation as Jews to tell the world, Hoda Bahadora, to say the brilliance, the beauty, the incredible splendor, the nature of what Eretz Yisrael is supposed to be. Kedushasa Uchvoda. We should be screaming off the rooftops, telling everybody how much we love this land, what it means to us, in order to be misakin what the Meraglim did that actually sent us into this exile. Halavai sheniske, acharei kol ha'aflagos kula mitzidenu. After all of our differences, and after all we sit and try and talk, we can talk for the next 1,000 years, he says, about the wonderful nature of Eretz Yisrael still. Halavai sheniske lehabia avchelek echad mirevava mechemdas eretz chemda. We can talk for the next 1,000 years about how wonderful Eretz Yisrael is. We wouldn't even touch the tip of the iceberg. We wouldn't even begin to have a glimpse of what all of this is supposed to mean for us. Umei hadras erta raso. Ve'ilu erachach maso. Geruach hakodesh hamasnosis bekirva. We can talk for the rest of our lives and we still will not have even began to encapsulate the greatness of what Eretz Yisrael really is for all of us. And at least he says we should do our best to try to speak just a little bit, to try and inform our children, our families, to try and inform ourselves about the greatness, about the beauty, about the splendor, about the unbelievable nature that Eretz Yisrael means for the Jewish people. And to think about its centrality. I think when we come to a parsha like Parshas Lech Lecha, it's a time for all of us to consider where Eretz Yisrael is in our lives, what exactly it means, how central it is to our conversations, how much we speak to our families and our children about the importance and the centrality of these mitzvahs. Like we said, over here the Chacham said, Kosvim alav ono afilu b'shabbos. We have a right even to violate the Isser of Amir la'akum in order to buy a piece of property in Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara says, like we said, a couple, if one spouse chooses not to move to Eretz Yisrael, they are considered at fault for ruining the marriage. When you think about all of this in the context of all the other Taryag mitzvahs and how we don't find this by anything else, it should give us the picture, it should give us the context of how important all of this actually is. Yiratzon shenizke bekarov, when we daven v'sechazena einenu b'shuvcha letzion berachamim hashav shchinascha letzion irecha, that we should all have that opportunity to come back.